Thank you, Mr. Haney. Good afternoon, brethren. A happy Sabbath to you all, and of course, a big welcome to guests as well, and everyone who is joining us on the webcast today. I know there are a number listening in. Glad you could be with us as well. Brethren, we all interact with a wide variety of people. Everyone comes from a different background, going through difficult things, perhaps, and some of those people might have more of a negative influence on those around them, not setting a great example, but setting a poor example of character. And then there's the other side of the spectrum, the other end of the spectrum, where people can have a very positive influence on those who they interact with. And they are an excellent example of godly character. The kind of people that make you and make I want to be a better person. The Bible is also full of such examples, different stories of people that fit this description. Today I'd like to look at one positive example. He is a man that all Bible students know, but most likely we don't study about him very often, not because he's not important, but because there's just very little said about him. And although only a small portion of Scripture covers his story, his character and his example in that way is very impactful. He was the type of man that makes us want to be a better person. The name of the man of which I speak is Boaz. He is a main character in his story, but he isn't the star of the show. The book wasn't named after him, but after Ruth. Of course, the story really is about her. But she isn't the only one who sets a great example of godly character. So today we're going to study Boaz and the lessons that we can learn from him in Christian behavior. Four lessons that we'll cover today. Paul instructed the Corinthians to imitate him as he imitated Christ. And the same can be said of anyone who follows God's way of life and sets a godly example, including this man, Boaz. So as we go through these lessons, we can learn from his example. And I think you'll notice that he followed the golden rule. Over all these lessons, he followed the golden rule. So I've chosen the title for the message today, Boaz and the Golden Rule. Very creative. Boaz and the Golden Rule. Let's begin by turning to 2 Chronicles chapter 3. We read a little bit about his name here. We'll see his name here in verse 17. Why his name was chosen is not clear, but I think it still gives a testament to his character. Verse 17, the whole chapter here is about Solomon building the temple. And it says, verse 17, then he, Solomon, and all those who helped him, of course, those who worked for him, then he set up the pillars before the temple. There were two bronze pillars. They were about 5 feet across and about 28 feet tall, very tall and solid pillars. One on the right hand and the other on the left. And he called the name of the one on the right hand, Jachin or Jachin, not sure exactly how to pronounce it, and the name of the one on the left, Boaz. Why were these names chosen? Again, there's very little known. Scholars have no consensus as to why or how these names were chosen, but there are a few things that we can speculate. Perhaps it's because of the meaning of the names. Jachin means to establish, and Boaz means strength, both descriptors of God himself. Perhaps it's because Solomon admired his ancestor. Boaz was his great-great-grandfather. Boaz begot Obed, who begot Jesse, who begot David, who begot Solomon. Or perhaps thirdly, just speculating again, is it because Boaz set a great example of strength in godly character? All of these are plausible, but no matter what the case is, it is still a testament to his character. If he had a poor reputation as being an unrighteous man, it would have been a tainted name, not something that Israel would have chosen to give to a pillar that was on God's temple. So this just illustrates that Boaz was a man of great character, someone who was a good example. Let's turn now to the book of Ruth as we start into the story. We're not going to read the entire book, so I'll paraphrase a few parts of it. We're going to just give some background through the first chapter, and then we'll begin reading in chapter 2. But if you remember the story, you remember that Elimelech and his family left Israel because of a famine. Elimelech had a wife, Naomi, and two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. They left Israel and went to Moab to get food, to be able to provide for his family. But at some point, Elimelech dies. And at some point after that, his two sons took Moabite wives, Ruth and Orpah. And 10 years later, they also died. Around that time, Naomi hears that the famine in Israel was over and decides to return to her people. And she encourages her daughters-in-law, who are all three now widows, to stay behind in Moab, to stay with their people and with their families. They must have grown close to each other. They embraced each other. They cried. And as Naomi encouraged them to stay, Orpah agrees, and Ruth, as we remember, refuses. They were probably kindred spirits. And the fact that Naomi was getting older, Ruth may have also felt a need to help take care of her, to travel back to Israel. And that's where we'll pick up the story in chapter 2 and verse 1. Chapter 2 and verse 1. There was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him, in whose sight I may find favor. And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. So he was a relative. We'll stop there for now. Just make one point here. This custom, as it seemed, where Ruth was able to go and glean from the fields, wasn't actually just a custom, but a command that you can read about in Leviticus 19 and also in Leviticus chapter 23. Well, part of God's instructions for the Feast of Weeks, in verse 22, I'll just quote, God says in Leviticus 23 and verse 22, "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field when you reap, nor shall you gather any gleaning from your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. I am the Eternal, your God." So this was a part of a command in Israel to allow the poor and the stranger to come in and gather food. And then we'll begin the first lesson in verse 4. Verse 4 of Ruth chapter 2. "Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, 'The Lord be with you.' And they answered him, 'The Lord bless you.'" The first lesson that we can learn from Boaz is that Boaz was a man of respect. Boaz was a man of respect. Just in this one verse, we can see that this is the case. This was a typical greeting, but yet it was very sincere. You can see that there is mutual respect between him and those whom he employed, his reapers, his workers. And this is crucial to any relationship, really, if you think about it. If there's not mutual respect, the relationship will suffer. And even though Boaz was very wealthy, he was humble enough to go out into the field and encourage his workers. Adam Clark's commentary says about these greetings, kind of expounds on a little bit. He says, "The words may be thus paraphrased. 'May God be with you to preserve you from accidents and strengthen you to accomplish your work.'" This is what Boaz said to his workers, to those who he employed. And they replied, "May God bless thee with the increase of the field and grace to use his bounty to the glory of the giver." I thought that was very well put, a way to kind of expound on these statements, these greetings, and what they really meant. Not only did Boaz respect his workers, but he acknowledges and gives glory to God. Let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. We're going to read verses 15 through 17. You'll probably want to put a marker here in Ruth, because we'll be coming back and reading a good bit more. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 15 through 16. If you have headings in your Bible, as I do, the heading in this small section says submission to government. The whole section here is about respecting authority. And although not every word spoken of here in these verses applies directly to Boaz, the overall principle most certainly does. We're going to read verse 15 through 17. Peter says, "For this is the will of God, that by doing good, you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men." As free, yet not using liberty as a cloak for vice or for wickedness, but as bondservants of God. And then in verse 17, part of being bondservants, of servants of God and doing his will, is to honor all. Honor all people. Respect them. Then it says, love the brotherhood. We're to love the brethren. To fear God and honor the king. This can be applied to Boaz. He treated his workers in such a way that he earned their respect. So when we say he's a man of respect, he was respected by others because of his character, but he also respected them. He valued and respected other people. He valued each one individually, and he cared for them. But most importantly, he recognized, he feared, and he respected God. He recognized that all blessings come from God, and by how he treated his employees, he respected God as well. Lesson number one, Boaz was a man of respect. The second of the four lessons we'll pick up in verse 5 of Ruth chapter 2, if you turn back there, please. The second lesson is that Boaz recognized good in others. Boaz recognized good in others. Beginning in verse 5, "Then Boaz said to his servant, who is in charge of the reapers, his supervisor, 'Whose young woman is this?' So the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, 'It is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab.' And she said, 'Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.' So she came and has continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house. Then Boaz said to Ruth, 'You will listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not glean in any other field, nor go from here, but stay close by my young women. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn.' So she fell down on her face," verse 10, "bowed down to the ground, and said to him, 'Why have I found favor in your sight, in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I'm a foreigner?' Verse 11, "And Boaz answered and said to her, 'It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother in the land of your birth, and have come to a people whom you did not know before. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge.' Then she said, 'Let me find favor in your sight, my lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants.'" We'll stop there. Here Boaz recognizes Ruth's character, that she was a good person, that she was following God's way of life. You know, actions speak louder than words, don't they? Much, much louder. Boaz had not even met Ruth at this point. That's why he asked the reaper who she was. But he had heard of her deeds and had discerned that she had virtuous character. Chapter 3 and verse 11 states this. We'll just read this one verse to draw out this point. Verse 11 of chapter 3, "And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman." Ruth was a good person. She had godly character. And Boaz didn't just see her when he asked and go on from there and say, "Oh, okay, you're Ruth. Nice to meet you." No, he noticed her. He acknowledged her. He understood her and respected her for who she was, for the good things she was doing. Some commentaries speculate that perhaps because who Boaz's mother was, which was Rahab the harlot, that this helped him to be a lot more compassionate towards Ruth and Naomi, and Ruth especially being a foreigner, just like his own mother was. It's clear, though, I think, that Boaz noticed the good in others as a regular part of who he was, not just this one instance. He saw that. Let's turn the question around now and ask that of ourselves. What about you? What about me? Do I strive to see the good in others or their flaws? I think we could all agree that it's natural and easy to be critical and to focus on the negative. I mean, if you think about any experiences you have, maybe, I don't know, getting your hair cut, going to a restaurant, you can have 10 good experiences and you have one bad experience, and which one do you remember? You remember the bad experience. James chapter 3, verses 9 and 10 speaks on this subject. If you turn there, please. James chapter 3, verse 9 and 10. This is speaking of the untamable tongue and what our natural inclination is, but instructs us what we should do. Verse 9 of James chapter 3. Speaking of our tongue, it says, "With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude or in the likeness of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing." And then he says, "My brethren, these things ought not to be so." Looking at other people's good character traits is not the same thing as excusing sin. It's just being careful not to focus on their flaws and overlook the good. Boaz sets a great example of this. Ruth would not have been perfect, but he saw something good that she did, and he recognized it. We should do the same, to look for good in other people. Let's turn back to the book of Ruth again for the third lesson. The third lesson today. We're going to continue reading in Ruth chapter 2 and verse 14. Verse 14 through 19. The third lesson is that Boaz was a generous man. Boaz was a generous man. Verse 14, we see this. "Now Boaz said to her," excuse me, "to Ruth at mealtime, 'Come here and eat of the bread, and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar.' So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed parched grain to her, and she ate and was satisfied and kept some back." We'll stop there just for a moment. This wasn't typical to include someone like Ruth, who was gleaning from the edges of the field with the workers. But Boaz included her here. He was generous. But we'll see even more generosity as we read on. Verse 15. "And when she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, 'Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her.'" Apparently, that was not normal either. I mean, if you think about who owned the field, he was commanded to leave the corners, but if someone decided to come in and take from the harvest itself, that would really be theft. So the reapers were trained and taught to be sure that they keep everyone in line in that way as well. But here he says to not reproach her, to give her extra. Verse 16, "And let the grain fall from the bundles purposely for her. Leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening, and beat out what she had gleaned. And it was about an ephah of barley." Now, I don't know if you know what an ephah of barley is, but I certainly did not. Does anyone know what that amount is? It's right around a bushel. Who knows what a bushel is? A few of us. I mean, I kind of have a rough idea, but if I said, "Do you know how much a gallon is?" I think everybody would know what a gallon is. All right, an ephah of barley is about 9.3 gallons, which is about 48 pounds, in one day that Boaz gave to Ruth and Naomi. I don't know how long that will last for a household of two women, but I imagine it'll last anywhere from several days to several, maybe a week and a half or two. It lasts quite a bit. Boaz was extremely generous. Let's continue to read what Naomi thought of this in verses 18 and 19. It says, "Then she took it up, this is Ruth, and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. So she brought out and gave to her what she had kept back after she had been satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, 'Where have you gleaned today? And where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you.' And so she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, 'The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz.'" Boaz did more than the letter of the law. He didn't just allow her to glean according to the instruction in Leviticus, but he saw a genuine need here. He saw a genuine need. Someone who did not have anyone to watch over them. They didn't have a man to take care of them. In this culture, that was important to protect and to provide. So he saw a need, and he gave generously. Turn with me, if you would, to Proverbs 14, verse 31. See one verse here that speaks about what God expects in generosity. I'm going to read the English Standard Version because of the words that it uses. We can follow along here. Verse 31 of Proverbs chapter 14. It says, "Whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker, but he who is generous to the needy honors him." Being generous to the needy is a way to honor God. The New King James says mercy instead of generous. So being generous is a way to show mercy. He who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who honors him, honors God, has mercy on the needy. When we're generous, what's our reason behind it? And Boaz wasn't looking for anything in return. Ruth had nothing to give him. Do we expect to get something back when we give? Because if that's the case, that's not true generosity. That's not to say that we should let other people take advantage of us, but we should give without expecting anything in return. Give without expecting anything in return. And Boaz sets a great example of what it means to be generous, being generous to those who truly and sincerely need it. Moving on, we'll get to lesson number four. If you turn back to Ruth, we don't have time to read all of chapter 3, so we'll summarize a little bit because it is an important part of understanding lesson 4. There was a law in Israel about a kinsman redeemer, and that's who Boaz became for Ruth and Naomi. The law was such that if a man died, in this case Elimelech, he died without an heir. His sons also died, and because they lived in Moab, it didn't pass down to them. In this situation, it was the duty of the closest male relative to buy that property and to marry the widow and to have a child with her who would become the heir for the deceased man. Naomi remembers this law and sees what a good man Boaz was and the likelihood that he would fulfill this. And so Ruth approached him in their customary manner to ask if he would do so. Now, why was Ruth the one to marry instead of Naomi? I don't know exactly. It seems to be the case that something to do with all three of the men dying in Moab instead of being in Israel and being passed down that way. And also, perhaps because Naomi was beyond childbearing years, that it defaulted to Ruth. But Ruth approaches Boaz and asks him to be the kinsman redeemer, but he actually wasn't the closest relative. He was second closest. And so we'll pick up the story in chapter 4 at this point. Boaz agrees to it, but there are legal actions that need to be taken in order for this to be processed correctly. Verse 1 of chapter 4 brings us to the fourth lesson. And this lesson is that Boaz was sincere in doing right. Boaz was sincere in doing right. He didn't, as kind of a sub-point, if you will, he didn't do what was right because he had to, because he just simply felt obligated. He did what was right because he wanted to. Boaz was sincere in doing right. Verse 1 of Ruth chapter 4. "Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, 'Come aside, friend, sit down here.' So he came aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city. 'Sit down here.' So they sat down." The gate of the city is where all the business was done. We understand that in the biblical accounts, in this time in history, all the judgments, all the transactions, business and otherwise, they were all done in the city gate. Verse 3. "Then Boaz said," he said to the close relative, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. and I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am next after you. So Boaz was second in line. He had to first allow the other man to have the opportunity. Verse 5, then Boaz said, on the day you buy the... let's continue reading the end of verse 4. Verse 5, then Boaz said, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth, the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance. And upon hearing this, verse 6, and the close relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it. And we'll stop there for now. The details of exactly how this would ruin someone else's inheritance, I don't know. I'm not sure that anyone really knows, but somehow it would affect it. And it would be the same for Boaz. But he didn't have a problem with that. He was willing to do the right thing. He wanted to do what was right. They needed someone, Ruth and Naomi, and he was willing to do it. Continue reading, we'll read verse 7 and then 11 and 12 to finish the story here. Verse 7, now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm anything, one man took off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was a confirmation in Israel. So at this point, the transaction was complete. Boaz redeemed the property instead of the other man. And then verse 11, and all the people who were at the gate, the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman who is coming to your house like Rachel and Leah, the two who built the house of Israel. And may you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. May your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this young woman. The other relative didn't want to ruin his inheritance. Now, is it true that Boaz could benefit from all of this? Well, yeah, he gained a wife whom he dearly loved. But that aside, I believe he would have still done the same. That wouldn't have changed his choice. It doesn't change his character. Perhaps Boaz had less to lose than the other man. You know, at the very least, he would never get his money back. He had to pay for this property and then give it to the heir that he would provide through Ruth. He would never get that money back. So he was still sacrificing, and yet he was willing to do it. Turn, if you would please, to Matthew chapter 7. We'll bring in the golden rule into the message here. A bad example would, of course, be the Pharisees. In chapter 23 of Matthew, Christ talks about them, and he said to the disciples, do not do what they say, but not what they do. Just paraphrasing here. They did the right thing to appear righteous and for their own glory, not because they actually wanted to do what was right. But that's not how we're supposed to be. Verse 12 of Matthew chapter 7. It says, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. If we only do what is right out of obligation, we're no different from the Pharisees. They follow the letter of the law for personal gain and to be seen by others, to look good. They didn't actually want to do what was right. But isn't the golden rule sound similar to that? You're doing unto others so they do unto you. No, not really. It doesn't say, do unto others so that they will do unto you. It says, treat others the way you want to be treated. That's with love. Doing what's right because it's what's right. Many commentaries note that Boaz, as the kinsman redeemer, was a type of the Messiah. And there definitely is a parallel. If you think about it, Jesus Christ, he chose to redeem us. That was part of the plan from the foundation of the world. And it was the only way that we can be added to God's family, but he still had a choice, and he wanted to do it. The New Testament says that he did it because he loved us. Boaz, in the same way, could have refused to be the kinsman redeemer, just like the other relative, but he didn't. Now, there are many other lessons that we could probably draw from the story of Boaz, that he was wise, he was humble, he was a gentleman, he was compassionate, kind, caring, lots of things we can learn from him. The four that we discussed today are that Boaz was a man of respect, Boaz recognized the good in others, Boaz was a generous man, and Boaz was sincere in doing right. He did what was right because he wanted to, not because of obligation. As we discussed in the introduction, there are people who have a negative impact and are a bad influence on others. And then there are those like Boaz, who just make you want to be a better person. He was a nice guy. He was a good man. Why? Why can we say that? How can we say that? Is it because he just had a friendly personality? Perhaps, but that isn't why. It's his character, revealed to us in the pages of the Bible, of his actions and his words. And I think we would all like to have a friend like Boaz. But do we strive to be a friend like Boaz? Proverbs 18, verse 24 says, "A man who has friends must himself be friendly." Brethren, these lessons we learned today are all qualities of godly, righteous character. We each likely excel in some and fail miserably in others. When we see righteous character in someone else, those who imitate God, like Boaz did, we should strive to imitate them. Boaz followed the golden rule. Let's be sure that we do that as well. Brethren, let's sincerely strive to do unto others as we would have them do unto us.